Welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Tuesday, August 8th, 2023. And today's episode is about what I call the Great Turning, which of course is a reference to the Fourth Turning by Howe and Strauss. But I think that what we are experiencing right now is beyond the seasons of humanity. This is not simply another cycle. This is the end of a great cycle of over 2,000 years of human history. And that's why I call this the Great Turning. Every once in a while, there is a super cycle that puts all the smaller cycles to shame. And in fact, in today's episode, I'm going to talk about close to 20 things that will end, that represent this end of this super cycle of human civilization. And as these things end, and by the way, some of these things are evil things. So we are going to see the end of a lot of mechanisms of evil. And so that's good news. Other things that will end are going to unleash a lot of chaos. But with each ending, there will be a new beginning. It's just that the future world is going to look very different from the world in which we grew up. And almost nobody can even imagine how different the coming world will be. There won't be a United States of America government, for example. There won't even be an IRS. You know, there won't be a dollar. We'll get to some of these things. But the future is going to look so different from today that it will be unrecognizable by a lot of people. And that's actually, you know, irrelevant, because a lot of those people are going to be dead anyway, so they're not going to be around to observe how different things are. Because the pathway from the present to the future that's coming is a very narrow pathway, and not that many people on this planet are going to be able to walk that pathway successfully. Now, the survivors will be relatively few compared to the current population. And that is, some of that's by design because of the depopulation agenda of the globalists. And some of it is not by design. Some of it's simply because humanity as a whole has set into motion things that will largely result in humanity's own extermination. For example, plastics pollution and pesticide pollution and chemical castrators and so on. These things aren't necessarily deployed by globalists, although some of them might be, like glyphosate, but just pollution in general is simply the carelessness and the short-sightedness of humanity. And it has ramifications as well that will contribute to the ending of the world as we know it. But then, of course, the new beginning of the next world, the next society, which, again, will be very, very different from what we have here today. And by the way, with this topic today, and you may have noticed the last couple of episodes, I have not covered the headline news as much, even though I've mixed in a few headlines here and there as they're relevant. But, you know, I scan the news headlines every day. I watch the breaking news. I assign news stories to my editorial staff. But I am not seeing big bombshell breaking headlines that are more important than what I'm about to tell you here. You know, of course, there's all the daily news of more prosecutions against Trump, more corruption by the DOJ, more corruption with, you know, the prosecuting attorneys, and more insanity in every, you know, possible way that you can imagine. More push for transgenderism, more people dying suddenly at young ages. But that news is every day. There's not much benefit for me telling you every day, you know, oh, it's Tuesday, more people died suddenly. You're like, yeah, I know that. We've already covered that 100 times. Or, oh, it's Wednesday, Trump got indicted again by a corrupt criminal cartel that, you know, of dishonest bureaucrat operators who are trying to prevent Trump from being elected again. Yeah, we know that. We know that. If you want to read the fine details of the Trump indictments and all the corruption and the rigged Arizona election and what Carrie Lake is talking about and so on, and all that's important, by the way, at one level, But you can read about all that news at sites like, you know, the Gateway Pundit or, you know, WorldNet Daily or other more political oriented sites. What I'm bringing you is big, big picture things that transcend the day-to-day politics and news. Although I'll throw in some items, again, where they make sense or if they make a particular point, such as Wells Fargo customers now reporting again they're missing bank deposits, right? Or Steve Kirsch reporting that the VAERS data, it's crystal clear that COVID vaccines are killing people, right? And things like that. I'll work those in where relevant, but that's not my focus. You don't need the day-to-day news unless it's different from, you know, last week's news, as far as I'm concerned. But right now, it's all the same news every day, and it's just the same corruption, the same theater, the same Truman Show, the same lies. And it might make you think that you're living in Groundhog Day, but I assure you, you are not. In fact, that's the focus of today's episode, is that you're actually living in the end days or the end of days of human civilization as it has existed on this planet since the time of Christ, frankly. You are living through the end of days, and if you live long enough or if you survive this, you may actually see what no human being in history has ever seen, which is the end of the epoch of human growth and dominance over this planet and a reformation of the way in which humanity does survive in much smaller numbers and smaller pockets and so on, in a more decentralized manner on this planet from here forward. So again, the great turning, there will be tragic endings. I'm going to go through the list here. There will also be new beginnings. There will be a resurrection of the surviving elements of human civilization. And yet it's a very narrow path of survival, very narrow path to navigate this process and make it to the other side. So let's start. I do have a list here. I've written down, looks like 17 or 18 things here that are coming to an end. And understand, just in advance, this is not all bad news. Some things that are coming to an end are, it's great that they're going to end, you know, such as the deep state, the IRS, right? Even the US empire. It's actually good news that the current structure of the corrupt criminal empire is coming to an end. So let's start with number one here, which is the dollar. And although there are things far more important than money, the end of the dollar is rapidly approaching, and it will have enormous implications that will reverberate across this planet. The dollar is coming to an end because the fiat currency has been not only weaponized, but also abused, obviously, and printed into oblivion. And with the release of the new, apparently commodities-backed, decentralized cryptocurrency of the BRICS nations that's reportedly going to be announced on August 22nd or thereabouts. And it doesn't mean this currency is going to take over the world on August 23rd, by the way. It'll take several years for this process to happen. But with the announcement coming on August 22nd, at least that's what is anticipated, it's the beginning of the end of the dollar. It means that countries around the world will start to abandon the dollar because they will realize, hey, we don't need it. We can settle our international trade in currencies other than the dollar. Now, of course, the United States will continue to use the dollar for a while as it loses value. And the UK and Western Europe will use the dollar, and Canada and so on. And, you know, even, I guess, Taiwan will accept dollars, at least for conversion. And dollars will be used in certain places in Central and South America for some time. But as the dollar loses its value very rapidly, it will be replaced by other systems of money that, frankly, just work better. And one of those systems is crypto, by the way. Crypto works better than fiat currency for all kinds of reasons. Namely, because you can't print it. You can't just keep printing it. And you can't have a government just come along and say, oh, I just want to create another $1 trillion of currency and then spend it as if, you know, it's full value. That doesn't happen in crypto. It doesn't work that way. And by the way, if you didn't hear my interview that I posted yesterday with Rich Dad, Poor Dad author Robert Kiyosaki, he says exactly this. He says he will not invest in anything that can be printed by governments or central banks. And so he says the dollar is toilet paper. It's trash. All fiat currencies are essentially going to zero at some point. And that's why he invests in gold and silver and certain types of crypto. He says Bitcoin. And he also owns portions of gold mining companies and oil exploration companies. Not just stock options, but I think he's a high-level partner with certain companies out there. So Robert Kiyosaki gets it. He knows the dollar is coming to an end. And it is. And when the dollar ends, which, again, won't be overnight, but it will be a collapse in the purchasing power of the dollar, then it will mean that the United States government will lose its ability to easily print spendable money, that is, money that has any real meaning or any value behind it. So in summary, understand that when the dollar ends, it will also end all of these other functions of dishonest, corrupt government, fascism, that are funded by the printing of the dollar. And that would be, you know, a bullying military-industrial complex that bullies the rest of the world into compliance. It would end the propaganda funding for the censorship industrial complex that, of course, colludes with big tech to censor and deplatform people. It will end the funding of the NIH and the bioweapons development, such as COVID and whatever else is in the Fauci freezers. Don't forget about that. And many, many other things. Too many examples to mention, but the funding, I mean, this is why governments have to print money in order to exist, because otherwise no one would support them. No one would vote for the policies that governments are pursuing, especially the U.S. government or the Canadian government or the Australian government, etc. Frankly, even the U.K. government, no one would vote for those things. So governments have to print money in order to fund programs that would otherwise never receive any form of public support. And that's why money printing is inherent in the tyrannical fascism of Western governments. And the good news is, of course, that all of this is coming to an end. Now, I'm not going to pretend that it won't be a catastrophic end. As governments fall, there will be chaos. There will be loss of life. You know, there will be times when the banks are closed. There will be areas where there are riots in the streets. But overall, the terminal failure of fiat currencies ultimately is a blessing to the future of humanity. And if humanity is wise, we will choose a new monetary system that cannot be printed and manipulated by governments. And currently, that the only candidate for that is found in cryptocurrency, by the way. And perhaps that crypto is backed by gold or backed by silver or backed by commodities or what have you. But cryptocurrency is the only system that is a usable, scalable, you know, rapid, borderless transaction system that has an honest ledger and that cannot be overtly manipulated by governments to be weaponized against the people. So think about this. When the dollar collapses, it's very easy for people to say, oh, you're talking about bad news. You know, it's a glass half empty. You're being pessimistic, right? Doom and gloom. The dollar's going to end and the government's going to collapse and society's going to collapse and people will lose their pensions and their savings and everything. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is, thank God the fiat currency is collapsing, because it's a dishonest system that has been used by governments and central banks to achieve tremendous evil and to fund censorship and to fund rigged elections and to fund terrorism and false flags and the deep state and all these things, the FBI, the DOJ, whatever. Thank God that that's ending. And that's a half glass full point of view of the world. Or maybe the glass is entirely full, because that's all good news to end all those things, you see. So don't be simplistic in looking at these things. When I talk about the fall and the collapse of the dollar, the failure of Western fiat currencies, that's neither solely good news nor solely bad news. It's a mixed bag. But in the end, it's outstanding news, because that's the only way that we get rid of the dollar and the fiat currency nightmare that we have all lived under. The obedience demands, the enslavement of ourselves and our ancestors, the onerous confiscation by taxation and confiscation by money printing. That must come to an end if humanity is ever going to be free. All right, so that was all just point number one there. Obviously, I'm going to have to move along here if we're going to get to the other 17 or 18 points. But point number two is the real estate bubble will also collapse for two reasons. One is because, of course, three reasons. One is the collapse of commercial real estate, which is upon us. The second reason is the end of the era of easy money. So money's becoming more expensive. So in other words, it costs more money to borrow money in order to buy homes, thereby making it so that home buyers can't pay as high of a price for the homes. So the real estate bubble will come to an end. But on the counter side of that, the human population bubble is also coming to an end. And global depopulation is upon us. And as the die-off accelerates to the tune of billions of human beings, that will suddenly make real estate a lot more affordable. So even though the short-term bubble is collapsing, the bubble based on basically cheap, easy money and artificially low interest rates, in the long run, real estate will be readily available and very affordable, but with an asterisk, only for those who survive. In other words, if you make it through, you can almost have any house you want. You'll be able to essentially claim houses or claim commercial buildings, depending on how high the death rate is from other factors that we'll talk about. But you'll be able to, there will be abandoned buildings everywhere, especially in the cities, which we'll talk about here. There will be abandoned malls, abandoned office buildings, abandoned homes, abandoned even bunkers and military bases and so on. It's really a question at some point of what you can defend and maintain. You can move in, you can claim something. If you can defend it and maintain it and live there and maybe have a local community, then it's yours, because there won't be nearly as many people around. And what's coming is going to completely disrupt, in fact, record keeping of who owns properties. And ownership is going to come down to, in many cases, just possession. Squatters, in other words, if you're living there and you're defending it, and you have enough people to help out and make it work, it's yours. So that's kind of where things are going. Remember, this is the great turning. This is not just the fourth turning. This is the great turning. This is the end of the super cycle of human civilization. All right, point number three is of what's ending. Remember, this is a list of things that are coming to an end. And what's ending is the global population bubble. Because 8 billion people on planet Earth right now, the way we are currently structured in society, this population will not continue. It is not sustainable under the current structure. Now, technically, planet Earth could support far more than 8 billion people, but not if we are constantly poisoning the food supply and poisoning the skies and dumping, birth control pills and prescription drugs into the sewer system all day long. And doing all the things that humanity does right now, massive microplastics pollution in the oceans and heavy metals pollution and pharmaceutical pollution of the world and just, dosing everybody with toxic chemicals and so on, toxic personal care products and all the fragrance molecules that cause cancer. I could go on, but you get the idea. And the vaccines. Don't forget about the vaccines, which are depopulation bioweapons. So the global population bubble that we have lived through is ending now. And when this is done, not only will we be perhaps fortunate to even have 4 billion people remaining on this planet, it's going to take several years, but the globalist agenda could kill off 4 billion people, as I've said before, but more importantly, human fertility is also coming to an end. That is, I should say, easy fertility. So it's going to be very difficult for future generations to conceive. And you may find this hard to believe, given, how many 15-year-old Latina girls get pregnant every day. But is that a racist joke or no? That's a demographic fact. But fertility declines when you have dioxins in the environment, like with the East Palestine train accident that released massive dioxins. Dioxins are one of these forever chemicals, and there are others, you know, PFAS and so on. These forever chemicals that interfere with fertility are bioaccumulating in the environment and in the food chain. And it's bioaccumulating in the bodies of human beings who are having offspring. And I've explained this before, but when a female child is developing in her mother's womb, the eggs that she will be born with and that she will use to have children are being formed as her body is being formed in her mother's womb. And so, in other words, it's the nutrition and the environmental exposure of the mother that determines two generations of fertility and genetic viability. Which means, by the way, there's actually a two-generational delay in the observation of the toxic effects of bioaccumulative toxins such as dioxins. We are already beyond the tipping point of sustainable human fertility, and yet very few people know it. Because of the toxicity of not just dioxins, but the things I said earlier, you know, the pesticides, herbicides, you know, the fragrance chemicals and molecules and personal care products and the vaccines and the mRNA injections and just on and on. And the heavy metals and all of this and the plastics and the hormone disruptors. Because of all of this, we are already on track for a future where it's almost like that Children of Men movie. I think, wasn't that starring Clive Owen? Children of Men, where nobody can have children on planet Earth. It's not going to get that bad, but fertility problems are going to be so much worse in the next generation, combined with the fact that men's sperm doesn't have the quality and motility that it used to have. The human male is being feminized with atrazine chemicals and, of course, soy estrogens and all this garbage that's in the food supply. And so men are becoming, you know, feminized snowflake women, not only behaviorally, but also in terms of their testes and their sperm production capability. There just aren't the men that there used to be on this planet. There just aren't the viable sperm-producing men that there used to be, combined with the fact that women's reproductive systems, which are far more complex than men's, are also being, you know, wildly thrown into chaos by all the hormone disruptors and plasticizer chemicals and, you know, stresses and toxins and things like that. So this is all point number three, the easy era of human fertility and reproduction is coming to an end, and it won't be long before simply being able to reproduce will be considered something of a miracle. All right, point number four. Here's what else is coming to an end. Western Europe and the U.S. Empire as we know it. Now, I don't mean that the map of, you know, France and Germany and the UK and so on. I don't mean that it's all going to fall away into the ocean and it won't even appear from outer space. What I mean is that the current structure of Western Europe is on a collision course. The economy of Germany, for example, has been crushed. The United Kingdom no longer has a functioning military. Did you know that? All right, you could say barely functioning. I think it was estimated they could last, 7 days in a war with Russia? And then it's done. So functionally, there's really no military in the United Kingdom. Hence the word kingdom. I mean, think about it. It used to be the kingdom. It used to rule the world. And now couldn't last a week in a fight with Russia. That's the end of the United, quote, kingdom. And much the same is true in Paris. And I mean, think about the Muslim invasion of Western Europe. Basically, Western Europe is going to be a Muslim continent, no longer a Christian continent or a collection of Christian nations. They're all being overrun. And also the financial systems of Western Europe are going to implode and collapse, along with the United States system. And the U.S. is, of course, being overrun by immigrants from Mexico, Central, and South America. And thus we have the ending of the U.S. empire, not only financially, but also demographically. It's not going to be the nation it once was, and nor will Western Europe ever be what it used to be. We're going to see a lot of chaos, a lot of collapse, a lot of changes. And like I said, the world that's coming is not one that you are going to recognize. But it doesn't mean that you can't be part of an amazing future, by the way. I mean, again, this is a half glass full slash empty type of thing. You might be sobbing and crying, oh my gosh, we're going to lose the United Kingdom and London and the kings and the queens and the Vatican and the city of London. And I'm like, good. Good riddance to those creatures, by the way, those demon creatures and Satanists and everything. It's a good thing to see the end of the dominance of the Satanic Vatican over our planet. It's a good thing to see the end of the city of London, by the way. It's a good thing to see the collapse of the so-called royalty, which just feeds right into the globalists who are trying to exterminate humanity. And they're going to have some degree of success. But ultimately, the ending of their control centers is really a benefit, a bonus to humanity. It's like I said, yeah, there's going to be a lot of chaos. There are going to be a lot of deaths among everyday people because of this, and especially those who are not prepared. They will not survive. But also, we're going to see the collapse of the cabal, the power cartels of Western Europe and Western empires that have basically exploited humanity and tortured humanity and have run amok across the planet, raping and pillaging nations for their natural resources and so on. When that comes to an end, it is a benefit to the future of the surviving human race, which, again, won't be everybody, but it's going to be, I guess, whoever's best prepared to make it through. So the U.S. empire will collapse. And again, that's a merciful thing for the future of the world. Now, it doesn't mean that the American dream or, you know, the original idea of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, it doesn't mean that that's dead and done with. No, it just means that the current corrupt money printing cabal of deep state criminals and CIA muckrakers and so on, that system will come to an end. And that is a blessing for the world. The U.S. empire is arguably, perhaps right along with the CCP of China, but right in the top two or three most evil empires operating on the planet today, has no values, no ethics, no morality, no respect for elections or democracy or freedom of speech or freedom of religion, anything like that. So no honest person can argue that it wouldn't be a blessing for this evil system to end. And it is ending. It's going to come to an end. It doesn't mean we're all going to survive that ending, like I said before, but it is coming to an end. Okay, so that's point number four. And again, this is going to take many years. I'm not saying overnight, like one day, it's all done. No. But then again, the former Soviet Union fell, I mean, seemingly in one day, but it was many years leading up to that. So the conditions were developing for years before that fateful day in 1991. But the signs were obvious even in the late 1980s, that the Soviet Union was going to collapse. Just like the signs are obvious right now in the United States that the American empire is going to collapse. I mean, how much more obvious do you have to get when your president is a brain-dead zombie puppet and Senator Feinstein looks like the crypt keeper from late night television? It's like, it's a zombie in the Senate. What the hell? And, you know, you got Nancy Pelosi. I mean, it's a clown show. It's a joke. As Michael Yon said, it's like the dog king, where they put a dog in office as a king and they make you worship the dog just to insult the people. And that's what Biden is. He's like the dog king. You know, probably He's probably barely house trained, actually. I think my dog is smarter than Joe Biden. I'm sure of it. My dog's pretty darn intelligent. He can stack rings. Did you know that? I've got these little ring toys, and I'll throw like four of them on the ground. I'm like, stack them. And he arranges them and stacks them so he can pick them all up. Smart dog. I don't think Joe could do that, actually. I think Joe would trip and fall flat on his face before he could stack dog rings. Plus, my dog doesn't have to wear a diaper. Think about that. Okay, point number five of what's ending. The war in Ukraine is going to end. And this may happen fairly soon, actually. This war is unsustainable on the part of the West. Now, Russia can probably sustain this quite a bit longer because Russia segmented its own economy and its manufacturing and resources from the West so that Russia doesn't depend on the supply chain of the West in order for Russia to function or to build weapons or to train soldiers or to grow food or to have minerals and energy and oil and all these other things. But the West has run out of ammunition. The West has run out of its supply chain. The West can barely manufacture anything. Weapons, rockets, missiles, you know, whatever, tanks, can just barely make anything. And since the West has been throwing everything into the grinder there with Russia, and Russia has just been, you know, destroying tank after tank and Bradley after Bradley and, you know, Leopards and who knows what else, this thing's coming to an end. And in fact, you're starting to see in the media now, Western press saying that it's going to be a stalemate. And a stalemate is a loss for Russia. So isn't it funny how the narrative shifted from 6 months ago? It was, oh, we're going to have this counteroffensive and Ukraine and the West, we're going to defeat Russia and we're going to drive them back. We're going to take Crimea and we're going to take back the Donbass and we're going to push the Russians back into their homeland. And then we're going to invade the homeland and you know, defeat Putin and we're going to cause a revolution and overthrow the Russian government, all this crap, right? That's what was in the media. Now it's like, oh, we're going to have a stalemate, which means we can't go any farther. We're not making any progress. The Russians have stopped us. So they're going to call it a stalemate. And they're going to try to sue for peace at some point here very soon. And then they're going to say that's a loss for Russia. So, I mean, the spin is just off the charts. But this war in Ukraine is coming to an end, which, again, on one hand, we don't want to see any more death and destruction. None of this was necessary in the first place, but I'm not going to go into all those details right now. But I don't want to see one more Ukrainian man or woman or child or elderly person harmed or displaced. I don't want to see anybody dying on the battlefield. I don't want to see Russians dying either. I mean, I don't want to see war and suffering and death. And none of it was necessary. This war was caused by the West expanding its borders, threatening Russia constantly for over a decade, and pushing for Ukraine to join NATO and pushing for missiles in Ukraine and bioweapons labs and so on. The West just would not back down. And so the deaths of these Ukrainian young men, which reportedly may number in the hundreds of thousands at this point, that rests on the shoulders of the United States of America, its State Department, the Joe Biden regime, and all the criminals in the State Department and who are part of the Biden administration. They are responsible for hundreds of thousands of deaths. But that war is coming to an end. Okay, that's point number five. Point number six, back home domestically in the United States, what's coming to an end is Western cities. Now, I said this something like 4 or 5 years ago, I believe. And at that time, it sounded kind of crazy. Like, what do you mean cities are going to end? I mean, cities are thriving. You know, people driving around. Look at LA. It's so busy. Look at San Francisco. Look at New York City. Look at all the commercial real estate. How's this ever going to end? Now, go drive around Philadelphia, huh? Go drive around Chicago. Go look at the empty buildings. Go look at the crime. Look at the violence on the streets. Look at the attics in Seattle. Look at the tent cities in Portland. Look at the shanty towns in California cities. Look at the financial collapse of these cities and also the mass migration away from the cities. And suddenly, it's obvious that what I've been saying for 4 or 5 years, or perhaps longer, I don't recall exactly, is all, of course, coming true. The cities are no longer viable. Remember how I've always said that cities are artificial constructs. They have to import food and water and energy and fuel as well. And then they export sewage and waste and pollution, right? This is how cities function. So cities are actually pollution factories and waste factories and crap factories. Well, these cities are only viable if they're safe, and also if there's a structure of economic activity that requires people to gather together in a city in order to communicate with each other and buy, sell, and trade, and you know, all the reasons that cities existed in the first place, going back through history. Why were cities founded on rivers? Because that's where the barges could transport material very, very inexpensively compared to anything over land, especially when it was on horseback. You know, barges were the way to go. That's why cities existed on rivers. Well, today the rivers are polluted. You know, is biosludge runoff in the rivers? They can still be used by barges, of course, for transportation. But the cities no longer are necessary as a gathering place for commercial activity because since COVID, everybody's working remotely. And now the technology exists, you know, remote work technology, and fewer people want to work at all anyway, especially in America. I mean, they've gotten used to getting paid sitting at their home swimming pool pretending to contribute to some kind of tech company. Like, oh yeah, we punch our clock, we pretend to show up, we attend a couple of meetings, and then the rest of the time we're tanning by the pool and slopping together some PowerPoint presentations so that we can, you know, act like we're actually employees or something. Or, you know, they just have ChatGPT write up a research paper for them, and then they turn that in as if it's their own. The point is, the American culture has collapsed. The culture of work or the work ethic has also collapsed. You almost can't hire an American who wants to work. And this is true in white-collar jobs as well as blue-collar jobs. And now I know there are some, and perhaps many of you listening, maybe you are the exception. And you do put forth effort. You are productive. Maybe you own your own business. But if you do own your own business, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Where are the Americans that are willing to work, that are willing to push a broom in a warehouse, or willing to actually do the report for the insurance company, or actually turn in work? You know, they're not very common any longer. Very few Americans are willing to work. And so cities themselves no longer have any special utility. There's no special reason to live in close proximity to other people when you're working on Zoom anyway. Why would you want to pay higher prices for real estate? Why would you want to pay higher prices for imported food and fuel and electricity? Why would you want to live in a place where there's a lot of violence and death because the police have been defunded and there's riots and whatever? So the cities are being rapidly abandoned, and Western cities are in the process of collapsing. So it won't be long before the downtown sectors of many once prominent U.S. cities, like Seattle, will be a ghost town. A ghost town. And, you know, Seattle used to be considered a really awesome city. There was, I don't know how many years ago, 15 years ago or something. Remember that the guy that, Owl City is the name of the musical guy, and he had a famous song called Fireflies. And he also had a song called Hello Seattle. It was Hello Seattle, dun, 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 dun. And it was all about Seattle. And at the time, I remember thinking, yeah, Seattle is kind of known as a kind of a hip, kind of a progressive, you know, advanced city, like stuff to see there. Like, would you go to Seattle now? You know, walking down the street with zombies and like crack addicts and people with lizard skin because they're smoking, I don't know, it's like bath salts or whatever that stuff is that turns your skin into reptilian stuff. You know, people are it's just zombie town in downtown Seattle now. It's kind of like, hello, Seattle. How's your tent city now? You know, it's just a cesspool of filth and addiction and crime. Who would go to Seattle now? Who would move to Portland on purpose? You know, who would go to San Francisco? Nobody. Not even any company. The companies are fleeing these cities as fast as they can. These cities are done. It's just like, forget it. No one wants to go there anymore. Meanwhile, rural real estate, you know, is exploding. I mean, look at Elon Musk. He comes to Central Texas, where I've been for, I don't know, 15 years or whatever, and he and his group start buying up all the real estate all over the place and setting up like 500-acre ranches for employees to live on. Why? Yeah, they don't want to live in the cities either. If you're one of the richest men in the world, as Elon apparently is, and you've decided you don't want to live anywhere in California nor in any city, you just want to live in rural Texas, basically. Why do you think that is? It makes sense. And that's why they're buying up all the land also for more, you know, corporate operations and so on. But cities are done, and city real estate will absolutely collapse. Now, what will be interesting in all of this is that, remember earlier how I mentioned that the squatters will be able to take over the commercial real estate. This will be true in the cities. There will be so many abandoned buildings and abandoned malls and abandoned parking garages and so on. Now, parking garages are actually very good shelter. They're shelter from the weather. Even though they don't have walls, they do have a roof. And you can build tent cities, basically, or shanty towns inside parking garages. Believe me, parking garages are going to be very valuable real estate in these abandoned cities. And I don't mean dollars value. I mean territory. Parking garages will be defended by gangs. And there will be landlords that own the parking garages, and you will have to pay rent to live in a tent inside a parking garage if you want to be part of that, you know, that structure. And they'll have snipers on the roof, you know, to defend the parking garage. And there'll be gang wars and so on. And there'll be, you know, active trade of drugs and child sex trafficking and prostitution and whatever else, because that's what left-wing cities are going to descend into. But parking garages are very strong structures, and they will last probably longer than almost any structure in a city other than bridge or highway overpasses that are built out of concrete with big concrete pillars. Those will last 500 to 1,000 years. A lot of commercial buildings will last 50 to 100 years. Some of them longer, you know, basically steel and concrete structures can last, you know, a century or more, but not without some maintenance at some point. So the more concrete the structure is, the longer it will last, and the more it will be used as shelters as these cities collapse. But I'm not going to go into more detail about that. Okay, let's go to point number 7, which is actually a really positive point. One of the things that will be ending is government domination over speech, because we're shifting from Web 2.0 to Web 3.0. Web 2.0 is a client-server relationship where everybody logs into the servers, like the Facebook servers and the YouTube servers and the Twitter servers, and then the servers have policies and determines what you're allowed to say and not say, and, you know, they deplatform people if you talk about vaccines or if you talk about the truth about anything. Well, what's coming now is Web 3.0. Web 3.0 is decentralized, peer-to-peer, serverless a content distribution. And there are two great examples of this that I've covered quite a lot and that I use. One of them is a platform called Bastion.com, B-A-S-T-Y-O-N. You should be using Bastion.com. And if you're wondering, well, what about the .com? Well, you just go there, you download the software, and then you never need to go to the website again. You're using the app, which communicates through a decentralized peer-to-peer network without using any central servers. The content is not hosted on the servers, and no server policies can kick you off or tell you what you can and cannot say. Qortal is another one, Qortal.org. And as you know, we've been working with Jason Crow, one of the founders of Qortal, to build out Brighteon on Qortal, which is now called QBrighteon. And it's an app that exists right now. It's running right now. In fact, this video will be distributed on Qortal through that app, which is available through the Qortal software that you can download for free at Qortal.org. Both of these apps do not use centralized servers, and they are permissionless in the sense that you don't need permission to use them or to post content, and no one can ban you. Now, of course, the individual receivers can block your channel if they don't like whatever you're sending them. It's like, you know, no more climate cult crap, and they block you, you know. But no central authority can block you just because you're saying something that the regime doesn't like. Now, Twitter today is, of course, the most active social media platform out there. And there are alternatives to Twitter, such as our own platform, Brighteon.social, or there's Truth Social, and there's Getter and others. And these are all Web 2.0 structures. Twitter will be obsolete. And I think Elon Musk already knows this, of course. But Twitter will be obsolete because no one will want a Web 2.0 application when a Web 3.0 version where you cannot be censored is actually readily available. Over time, more and more people will shift to things like Bastion. And over time, Brighteon Social will be made into a Web 3.0 format, peer-to-peer, with no central servers. And those who are still stuck on Twitter or Facebook will just be stuck in the past where they're not getting access to the best information because of censorship. So as this process takes place, governments will lose their ability to control online speech. And what's fascinating is that these solutions are available right now. Now, part of speech is money. And decentralized money is called cryptocurrency. So just as Bastion and Qortal are peer-to-peer decentralized applications that protect freedom of speech and are permissionless and do not require you to get permission from a centralized authority, well, cryptocurrency operates also as a decentralized, permissionless peer-to-peer system where you do not need permission to move money, to send money, to receive money, whether it's Bitcoin or Monero, which is a privacy coin, or whatever other coins that you're into, which we cover a lot, by the way, on decentralize.tv. If you haven't seen the episodes of that show, that's my new show with my co-host, Todd Pittner. You got to check out that show because it's game changer. Seriously, go to decentralize.tv and watch some of the episodes and it'll blow your mind. And we have more episodes coming too, by the way. But decentralized money is already here. And frankly, it has existed since 2009, thanks to Bitcoin. And even though early on, even I thought that Bitcoin was a joke, and it turns out it's not. It's not. It's now very mature. And in fact, it works much better than fiat money. In fact, there are privacy crypto projects that are really viable because it's impossible for governments to see your wallet balances, to track your transactions, spends, or receives. And it's also impossible for governments to confiscate your money digitally. And so privacy crypto, I think, is actually the future of pro-liberty, pro-freedom money, even more so than Bitcoin. And Monero is the number one privacy coin right now in terms of liquidity and recognition. But there's another privacy coin called Firo, F-I-R-O, and the website is firo.org. And probably sometime today, in fact, I'm sure of it, we are posting, in fact, the full interview with Ruben, who's the head of projects or outreach, I forgot his exact title, with Firo. And he joined me from Malaysia, so I did the interview with him late at night, USA time. And we have a full episode about Firo with Ruben at decentralize.tv. That episode should be available today. It's a fairly long episode. It's over 2 hours. I'm not kidding. But Todd and I do a full discussion about privacy crypto. We get distracted talking about Bigfoot and cryptozoology, by the way. But that's beside the point. If you want to learn about privacy crypto, whether it's Monero or Firo or the other coins that are out there, and how they work and what are the strengths and weaknesses and all these kinds of things, then watch our show. You can find that again at decentralize.tv. And seriously, I think the future for people who want to be free, and also for local communities and private membership associations, and even I can actually see, as the dollar collapses, I can see cities or counties or even entire states quite literally adopting crypto as their new electronic currency. Why? Because the systems already exist. They already work. They have a proven track record. They're scalable. The wallets already exist. The apps already exist. And now I can see some states, like Texas, for example, might take a coin that it likes and it might fork it and launch a whole new, like, Texas currency. And this has been proposed by lawmakers, by the way. And they might have, a gold-backed Texas cryptocurrency, kind of like the BRICS system, but maybe just for the state of Texas. And this is quite possible, especially as the dollar collapses. I think you're going to see a combination of printed paper currency by different states, but also, more importantly, electronic currency, because that is, rapid transaction. It's borderless. It's permissionless. And, distributed ledger means that nobody can print the money. So it's very easy for the public to trust in a, quote, trustless system. That's what it means by trustless, is you don't have to trust a government to keep its word and not print money. It's trustless because they can't print money. They can't cheat. They can't alter the ledger. No one can. Believe me, if somebody could cheat and print a trillion bitcoins, they would have already done so. And then Bitcoin would be worthless, by the way. The reason Bitcoin has value is because it's an honest ledger. And the same thing's true with Monero and Firo and other projects. So depending on how this plays out, we could actually end up in a future with the collapse of the dollar, but the rise of private digital cash, electronic money that is in many ways better than anything the government ever offered us. And in that situation, by the way, do you know you don't need banks? You don't need banks because you don't need to keep your money in a bank. It's not safe there anyway, and a lot of banks are going to collapse. That's actually point number 11 here, so we'll get to that. But let's go on to point number 8 of things that will end. You're going to see the end of low-cost global shipping and transportation, which is going to end the reliable supply chains that we had experience in throughout most of our lives, all the way up until COVID. So the supply chain nightmares that you've seen since COVID are just the beginning. And the reason we're going to have the collapse of low-cost global shipping and transportation is because we're no longer going to have the dominant United States Navy projecting power over the shipping pathways of the oceans, the shipping routes, the lanes around the world. Because the U.S. Navy, being part of the woke military, is not as strong as it once was, and we'll probably see some aircraft carriers destroyed by Russian hypersonic missiles coming up at some point here soon, or Chinese hypersonic missiles, and the U.S. has no defense against these missiles. And so every aircraft carrier is just a sitting duck out there, waiting to be destroyed by Russia or China. And when the aircraft carriers go down, and that's going to be a big news day, when the first U.S. aircraft carrier is actually destroyed and sinks because it's hit by a Russian or a Chinese missile. And I'm not, by the way, I'm not cheering for this, by the way. It's going to be a tragic day. I don't want to see that happen. But it will happen. And how many aircraft carriers does America have? I don't know, was it like 12 or 14? I don't know the exact number, but I think it's between 10 and 20, something like that. And that number is going to approach zero. And then how will the U.S. project power? Now, I know there are other types of ships. You know, it's not just aircraft carriers, but the aircraft carrier is the core of the battle group that projects power. And when you can't project power, then you can't protect the international shipping lanes. And then you have just piracy, you know, off the coast of Somalia, for example. And you have shipping container ships that are simply just, you know, hijacked and taken over. And you don't have any way to protect them. It's done. And then you don't have, of course, international shipping at, you know, pennies per pound any longer, which means you don't have the supply chain benefits of that. You can't get goods from China or Vietnam or Korea or wherever, or even from the Middle East or wherever they're coming from to the United States. That supply chain collapses, and then you're going to have nationwide poverty, because people who are used to being able to go to Walmart or Home Depot or wherever to buy cheap stuff, or Amazon.com, you're going to find that, hey, guess what? These things, they don't exist anymore. And if you're lucky enough to find some things that do exist, they're going to be, you know, 1,000% higher price. That day's coming too, because the global supply chain is going to collapse as we know it. And this is also because, of course, the U.S. military has become, sadly, a joke in the eyes of much of the rest of the world. And when the U.S. loses the war in Ukraine, that's only going to add to the clown show factor of the United States military being now a woke transgender festival of, you know, lunatics and delusional propagandists. Believe me, the Russians don't give a crap how many transgenders are spokespeople for the Western military. The Russians are just going to keep building and launching artillery until they gain the ground they want, or hypersonic missiles and destroying, you know, naval ships and things like that. So, folks, the days of cheap, easy goods are essentially coming to an end. And that's actually point number 9. Which is what I call cheap materialism. The China-made physical goods, all the low-cost clothing, all the little parts and the electronics for telecommunications and computing and radios and all these things, and car parts and tractor parts and all this. The low-cost Walmart trip, you know, to get your $1.99 fly swatter, the dollar store, Dollar General, Dollar Tree. You know, forget it. It's going to be like the $10 tree, you know? But this era of cheap materialism is coming to an end also. And that era was really characterized by a lot of people somehow worshiping materialism for its own sake, just wanting to have just endless supplies of cheap stuff as if it somehow made them feel more comfortable. And I'm not talking about prepping, because I do have a lot of prepping stuff, because, you know, I'm a community level prepper. So I have a ton of extra, you know, first aid supplies and bandages and iodine and stuff like that. But I'm not sitting around with stuff that's just pointless. Like, oh, here's like, you know, 57 handbags and 200 pairs of shoes. No, like the stuff I have is practical for the community to survive hard times. Whereas we live in a society dominated by materialism, fashion, people collecting cars because they like them. I mean, Jay Leno owns like 100 cars and motorcycles. I mean, okay. Yeah, I mean, look, it's a free market. The guy can spend his money however he wants. I'm not going to take that away from him. But, you know, why do you need 100 cars, man? I mean, seriously. I guess somebody could ask me, like, why do I need 50 guns? But there's a good answer there. They kept getting better, and I wanted the newest, best version. That's why I've got it. I've got more than 50 guns probably over the years, but most of them are kind of outdated, and I will probably never fire them ever again. I mean, I'm using the best couple of rifles and pistols. I mean, like right now here, I have this Glock 43X right here. With this Shield Arms magazine that holds 15 rounds. And I've got a Hollow Sun red dot sight on it at the moment. And I'm like, man, this is a really good gun. They didn't have this thing even 5 years ago. And Shield Arms didn't have these magazines, which is, again, 15 rounds in a magazine in this super compact pistol that's very concealable. So, of course, I want a better gun. And the reason I have the old guns is because I'm not selling guns to people. I'm just, you know, holding on to them. It's whatever. But that's different than people who hoard material stuff just because they, I don't know, they need more plastic flip-flops or something, which I never understood that. You know, come to think of it, I've still got one of the very first guns I ever bought, which was a Glock 26 back in the 1990s. Had one of those, which today looks like an ungrippable, like really fat gun with not enough of a magazine to hold on to. I'm surprised I was ever able to shoot with that thing. You know, the ergonomics of guns, even Glocks, are so much better today, but I don't want to get off track. All right, anyway, that's point number 9, the end of cheap materialism. Okay, point number 10, this is about medicine. We're going to see the end of the material focus and the compartmentalization of medicine. And one of the silver linings of COVID, as horrible as that whole saga was, is that it has awakened a lot of people to the failures of the Western medical system. The failures of the germ theory. The failures of just the whole system of medicine and doctors and hospitals who all said, oh, you can't have ivermectin. They became ivermectin Nazis, right? Like the soup Nazi. No soup for you. But now it's like, no ivermectin for you. And then patients died because of that. So, even though the whole Western model of medicine is supposed to be that, okay, there are molecules that can kill diseases, even when there is a molecule like ivermectin that can stop disease and death from the bioweapons, even then the doctors won't allow you to have it. They would rather you die than to give you the molecule or even prescribe the molecule that could save your life. So the whole system of Western medicine is a failure. It is broken. It is, frankly, a modern-day medical holocaust against humanity. The Western medical system is a scourge upon the planet. Now, granted, it has its place in, you know, trauma surgery and emergency rooms and, you know, prosthetics. And they're, Western doctors are great at things like reconstructive surgery, right? And, even I said when I had an accident that almost severed my finger, even I said, look, if I had severed this primary tendon, yeah, I would undergo microsurgery to reattach the tendon. Well, Western doctors are good at those kinds of things. So they do have a place. But I'm talking about the GPs that are pushing all the statin drugs and the blood pressure drugs and the diabetes drugs and the Alzheimer's drugs and the antidepressant drugs, just drug this and drug that, and medicate this and medicate that. And they just kill all their patients with toxic pharmaceuticals while denying them access to the molecules like ivermectin that are off patent and that could save lives. But this entire model of medicine is outmoded, and it has been for a very long time. And as I related, even in healing my finger, which was a miraculous recovery of the nerves, I had to regrow nerves. I had to regrow the lateral ligaments. I had to regrow blood vessels and skin. And I showed you the photos of that, and people are freaking out. It's like, how is that even possible? Well, I use energy medicine, folks. I use energy medicine. What do I mean by that? Well, like sound healing, vibrational medicine, and light healing. And there's also something out there. I interviewed Scott McKay recently about this EE systems, scalar wave healing system of some sort, which I don't fully understand. And I'm not, you know, personally endorsing it at this point, but I'm going to check it out and see if I can learn more about it. And it's part of this realm of energy medicine. Even sunlight is a kind of medicine. You know, homeopathy is energy medicine. Mind-body medicine. Spiritual healing. Even the placebo effect is itself a kind of mind-body medicine or energy medicine. It's healing through intention. Believe it or not, that's actually how the placebo effect works. And the future of medicine will not be about bombarding the body with toxic chemicals. Like, here, have more chemo. Like, all your hair hasn't fallen out yet. Have more. Or, you know, it's like, oh, your muscle mass hasn't wasted away yet. Have more chemo. That's not going to be the future of medicine. Like, poisoning a patient almost until they die and then declaring victory over the tumor. No. The future of medicine will make the current era of medicine look like a cruel, not a joke, but more like torture. The future of medicine will involve mind and consciousness and vibration and all kinds of advanced technologies, but Big Pharma has a stranglehold over everything in medicine because it's a profit center. But with the collapse of the dollar will come the collapse of Big Pharma, because Big Pharma's top customers are governments that print money. Who bought all the vaccines, right? Who's paying the Medicare and the Medicaid for all the drugs? It's the governments, and they're printing money in order to do that. So when the dollar collapses, by the way, Big Pharma collapses. And that is something to, at least the pharma collapse is something to celebrate, because that's the only way we're going to get to the future of real medicine and real healing, is to discard the horrendous criminal cartel of the pharmaceutical industry, which is just, even Pfizer has a whole history of felony crimes and killing children with medical experiments and being criminally charged by governments of the world, like Nigeria, for example. You know, Pfizer is a criminal company. No wonder the U.S. government loves doing business with Pfizer, because the U.S. government is a criminal cartel as well. All right, so that's all number 10. And again, this is, that's a piece of good news, something to look forward to. The end of the medical system as we know it today, leading to something much better, with a lot less human suffering, a lot more healing, and so on. Point number 11 of things that are going to end is small and mid-sized banks. And this isn't necessarily a good thing. I don't want to see centralization of the banking system. But the reality of this, and Janet Yellen really spoke to this, is that they're going to bail out the big banks as the financial failures really accelerate here. They're going to bail out the big banks, the JP Morgans, the Bank of Americas, and so on. They're not going to bail out the small and mid-sized banks. And so we will see failures of those banks. The CBDCs are going to be rolled out with the help of the big banks. And the centralization of control over your money requires the government to really only allow a few larger banks to survive, because then they can control them, you know, very easily, versus trying to control a bunch of local, you know, 1,000 local small banks. So even the government and the Fed, they want small banks to fail. And that's why they will refuse to bail them out. But they'll always bail out the big banks, because, of course, they need them to survive in order to push the CBDCs. But there's another factor in all of this, of why small and local, or small and mid-sized banks are going to fail. And that answer is, in fact, cryptocurrency, which I spoke about earlier. See, I'm in the process, by the way, and I've said this publicly, of taking my after-tax personal savings and putting it into gold and silver and crypto. And you notice in none of those things do I need a bank. I don't need a bank. In fact, I don't trust a bank to hold any of my assets. I don't trust a brokerage firm to hold my assets. I don't trust Charles Schwab. I don't trust Fidelity. I don't trust, who are all the brokerages out there. I certainly don't trust Robinhood. They screwed me over and froze my account just when I was testing it out. I don't trust any institution to hold assets for me. And given that cryptocurrency works so much better than banking, and cryptocurrency, it's open 24/7 too, unlike banks, and still closed on Sundays and Saturdays and in the evenings and everything. Are you kidding me? I can send crypto to anybody anywhere in the world in minutes without asking for permission, without getting it flagged as possible fraud, which the banks do every time you try to touch your own money. Like, it could be fraud. Just lock it up, seize it up, you know. I can receive money. I can spend the money. I don't have banks flagging it, freezing it, and doing bail-ins and taking it and all that crap and limiting withdrawals. No, banks don't work. Crypto works. Privacy crypto works. Works really well, like Monero, as I mentioned earlier. And Firo, the new interview coming out right now as well. And other privacy coins that we've covered at Decentralized TV. And even Bitcoin works. And we interviewed a guy with Dash. And Dash works, but it's not a privacy coin, but it's really fast for e-commerce and transactions. And lots of coins work. You know, Dogecoin works. And I guess WowNero even works. And a bunch of coins that I don't really own and know about. That, because I don't know, a lot of coins are just me too coins. But the point is, any one of those that I just mentioned works better than a bank. And I can't get out of the banks fast enough. So how is a bank ever going to convince a guy like me to come back and give them my money? Like, what are you going to do for me to make me want to give you money and trust you with money? And the answer is nothing. There's nothing you can do because I don't trust you, banksters. I don't trust you because you've screwed everybody over. You know, JP Morgan Chase screwed over Dr. Joseph Mercola, cut off his staff and their family members from ever banking with Chase. Cut them off. What a bunch of crooks. Is the Chase Bank a bunch of crooks? I don't trust these banks. And, you know, one day they're going to close without notice and there's going to be a bail-in. Oh, we took all your money. What? Yeah, we just took your money because, you know, government emergency, whatever. It's a bail-in. It's a bank freeze. It's a bank holiday. And all the people who have their money in the banks are going to be just losing their minds, freaking out. Oh, my God, I can't get my money out. Yeah, of course you can't. Because the bank stole it. How did you not see that coming? It's like the most obvious thing in the world. It's like walking through a tunnel with train tracks and there's a light ahead of you coming right at you and you're like, huh, I wonder what that is. Yeah, it's a head-on collision with a freight train. How do you not see the banking collapse coming when they're going to steal all your money? So, in fact, I have a slogan for people. It's like, whatever money that you don't want, just leave it in the bank and they will take it from you. They will steal it one day soon. Whatever money that you actually want to have under your control, though, you need to take self-custody. And the best vehicles that I know of to do that are gold and silver and crypto. But there are other vehicles like real estate and, you know, fine art, if you're an expert in that. I hear Hunter Biden has some fine art for sale, if you're an investor looking at that. Yeah. You can invest millions of dollars in Hunter Biden art. Apparently, you'll get favor at the White House, too. There you go. There's a store of value for you, right? Okay, so that was point number 11, which is, again, the what's ending are small and mid-sized banks. Point number 12, what's ending, is going to be widespread acceptance of cash. And there's a couple of reasons for this. One of them is because the governments are trying to outlaw cash. Because they want to force everybody into CBDCs. But depending on what happens economically and with the collapse scenario and so on, cash may also end up being replaced, at least locally, by silver. And I think a combination of silver and crypto. So I actually see a very viable and thriving economic system where people locally at the farmers markets and local retail and the in the flea markets and where people are buying and selling and trading with each other and garden seeds and whatever, fresh farm eggs and jars of honey, people are going to use silver. You know, silver coins, 1 ounce silver rounds, silver eagles, and pre-1965 silver, you know, dimes and quarters minted by the U.S. Mint and so on. Those are going to be actively used in local commerce. At the same time, I can see crypto playing a very strong role both in local and, of course, longer distance commerce. And I see both of these coexisting at the same time because they each have advantages and disadvantages. When the cell towers don't work, you better have some silver coins. But if the cell towers do work, you might want to hold on to your silver and just transfer, like, Monero to the farmer that's selling you a loaf of bread or what have you. Or whatever crypto you all agree upon. But it better be a privacy crypto so that you have, of course, all your privacy protected. But I don't see that green cash is going to be something that will have value for very long because, of course, the dollar itself is collapsing. So you notice that when you're trading in silver or trading in crypto, you're not trading in dollars. You're not actually even really going to see things priced in dollars for, you know, forever. I mean, at some point, the dollars will become so ludicrous because the inflation is so out of control, the hyperinflation, that to price something in a dollar currency is a waste of time. You would start pricing things, if you're a local merchant, you would start pricing things in ounces of silver or grams of gold, or perhaps in a cryptocurrency of some kind, like Bitcoin, because it's so popular. So I would imagine that we're actually going to start seeing local commerce taking place with either gold, silver, or crypto as the unit of pricing measurement, not the dollar. And cash becomes pointless as the dollar goes to zero. So I have a little bit of cash, by the way, just for short-term emergencies and to get through short-term collapses and glitches and what have you. But I don't have any substantial amount in cash because I figure that's all going to zero anyway. And I probably end up, you know, whatever cash I'm sitting on, again, not that much, but it's probably going to end up being wasted anyway. But it's just like Robert Kiyosaki said, you know, if it's cash, if it's currency that the government can print, it's toilet paper. I might wipe my butt with the cash. I might start, you know, a fire with it on the rocket stove to heat up a pot of water or something, but probably not going to end up using the cash for anything, you know, useful. All right. Point number 13, then, of what's coming to an end is the era of affordable food. And this is simply because affordable food depends on cheap energy. And food abundance, which means you can get food without rationing, you know, without the scarcity of limits, and you can only buy so much per week. Abundant, affordable food is an expression of cheap energy, which means right now, cheap fossil fuels for the most part, because that's what powers the tractors and the transport trucks and the combines and all this kind of stuff. Well, I guess the tractor is powering the combine, but you get my point. You got to have cheap diesel in order to have cheap food. And the era of cheap diesel is coming to an end also because all the attacks on fossil fuels and the deliberate takedown of the energy infrastructure of the United States of America. So the era of affordable food is ending. But guess what's the most affordable food that you can acquire? It's food that you grow yourself. This is going to become increasingly apparent as food inflation at retail gets even worse. It will become increasingly wise to grow more of your own food, not as a hobby, but as a money-saving measure, because the food will be so expensive at retail. And there will be a thriving local market and a lot more people getting into gardening because it will be the new gold mine. There will probably be people who used to grow marijuana, you know, cannabis, who will end up growing, you know, vegetables, because the vegetables will pay more profit than the cannabis. Cannabis actually isn't making much profit anymore since the government legalized it. By the way, there's an interesting dynamic there. Or it's legalized in many states, I should say, but not all of them. But vegetables, being that they will be in short supply, and things like strawberries, can actually be a gold mine. So depending on your climate and what grows well in your area, understand that transportation is going to be more limited and more expensive because of rising energy and fuel prices. And so you won't be able to export across continents very easily, but you may be able to grow food and trade with people within, you know, 100-mile radius or something like that. Just depends on the circumstances. But certainly at your local farmer's market, if you can grow avocados or almonds or oranges, man, you're going to be doing really well. Because people will pay for real food and they'll trade you, you know, silver or crypto or whatever is accepted as money. So get ready to pay a lot more for food and get ready to grow some food as a means of saving that money. Now, point number 14 of what's coming to an end was kind of implied, and it's the end of affordable energy or cheap energy. So energy itself, both in the form of kilowatt hours, but also in the form of combustible fossil fuels, both forms of energy are going to become a lot more expensive. This is because of government action to shut down the energy infrastructure. Solar and wind are very expensive forms of energy, and they're not really sustainable because of all the mining that's required for the rare earth minerals, plus the copper and aluminum and so on that's necessary to manufacture these systems. But energy is going to become more scarce, difficult to acquire, as refineries will be sabotaged, more of them, across America, and fossil fuel distribution will become less reliable. And we've also seen the shutting down of transport companies. And in the area of commercial pallets, we've seen, of course, Yellow Freight just declared bankruptcy. So 30,000 employees just lost their jobs. One of the largest trucking and transport companies in America, done. So it's a lot more difficult to transport partial loads right now, or pallets of materials. Now, that's different from the fossil fuels trucking. Fossil fuels trucking companies, you know, have special trucks for transporting fuel and so on, or natural gas, you know, different kind of trucks, different kind of industry. But those are also facing very difficult economic circumstances because of all the attacks on the energy infrastructure. So be prepared to pay a lot more for energy in the years ahead. All right, point number 15 of what's coming to an end. This is a big one. This is going to have ramifications through all of history here. What will end is the global debt pyramid based on the current insane era of massive debt, the derivatives, and pensions. Basically, all kinds of systems where people are owed money or financial institutions are owed money because somebody created a financial instrument and an obligation and sold it to somebody. And since then, they've been just trying to cover their bases and hope that the end game never arrives. So they're just kicking the can down the road. Well, that can kicking is coming to an end, and we will see a global collapse of the debt pyramid, especially across Western financial institutions such as the Federal Reserve. We already mentioned the dollar, the euro will be impacted, also the European Central Bank, the ECB, and also the yen, the Japanese central banks, and so on. And as this global debt pyramid collapses, you know, it's going to augment the other dynamics that I've already described here. For example, the end of cheap, affordable consumer goods, the collapse of supply chains, the end of cheap, abundant food, and so on. Because we're going to see capital really dry up in a big way to where there won't be easy availability of capital in order to launch new businesses or grow businesses. In other words, the infrastructure that powers human civilization requires a certain amount of debt and a free-flowing liquid capital in order to function. And as that dries up, it's going to end up being kind of like a super glue poured into the gears of an economic engine. It's like the super glue is going to be fighting the grease, the lubricant. And if the engine stops for a moment, the super glue kicks in. And then your engine has all seized up and you don't have, you know, obviously a well-oiled machine. You have a high friction, you know, clunkety clunk, metal got chunked type of, you know, braking engine. And that's not going to be good for anybody. So the global debt pyramid will collapse and it will bring down a lot of the elements of modern society with it. All right. Point number 16 of what's coming to an end. And this is good news. is the woke cult and its transgenderism lunacy and the whole era of pushing child mutilations and grooming. This is coming to an end. One way or another, it will end. Now, there are several reasons for this. Primarily, it's all just a mass shared mental illness delusion. And the backlash against this will truly be historic. This will be taught in, you know, psychology studies for centuries to come. Kind of like the Salem witch trials. You know, future members of academia will look back and say, how did all of Western society lose their minds and decide that mutilating children was, you know, progress? How did that happen? And how did so many people go along with it? And how did all of the collective West lose their minds? Well, you know, a lot of reasons for that. But one of the core underlying reasons is because Western civilization has been taken over by Satanists and demons, which is actually my next point. And the demonic effort is to destroy the fertility of humanity and the sanctity of especially the woman who can create life in the image of God. And so the demonic entities in society want to mutilate children's genitals because those genitals symbolize the ability to create new life and to experience sexual reproduction of the human race, which is the sustainability model for humans surviving. So as all of that is under attack, of course, the lunatic demon creatures target children. And so that's the LGBT transgender push of the woke cult, which is truly demonic and satanic in every form that you can imagine. But the backlash is coming not only in a legal sense because of so many young people now in their 20s who were mutilated and are now suing hospitals and speaking out against the trans cult. But also another reason is because that, well, the transgenderism mutilation, being that it blocks reproduction, it means that these people who undergo these mutilation procedures will themselves not reproduce. So they are ending their future in the human race, almost by definition. But the biggest reason why the trans cult will come to an end is because, and this gets to point, the next point, number 17, is that Satan will be defeated on Earth. So there is a demonic infestation on our planet right now. Satanism is rearing its ugly, horrifying head. And it has infiltrated almost every institution, government, science, medicine, academia, entertainment, music, Hollywood, all that stuff. Geopolitics, right? Everywhere you look, it's just the rise of transgenderism and Satanism and child mutilations and child trafficking and pedophilia, grooming, and like organ harvesting and all these horrible things, right? This is because we're in the final spiritual battle over this planet. And although there are many battles happening at the same time, one of the battles is between Satan and God. You know, Satan signifying death and suffering and destruction, which is Democrats and leftists and transgenders and so on. And God signifying, of course, light and love and peace and truth and transparency. So, by the way, where does censorship fall on the spectrum? It's darkness. It's demonic, right? So everybody on the left that's pushing censorship is in league with Satan. And they've chosen the wrong team because Satan gets defeated. We already know this because it has been written in the book. We already know how this ends. That Christ returns and God defeats Satan. And all those who went along with Satan, they go to hell. And although there may be some poetic license with some of the descriptions of how this happens, the bottom line is quite clear. If you're in league with Satan, you sacrifice your soul and you are destroyed and you die a horrible death and then a horrible eternal suffering burning in hell. Whereas if you're on the side of light and truth and protecting children and the side of humanity and the side of protecting transparency and freedom and truth and free speech and all these things, which is what, of course, what we stand for, then you're on the side of God and the side of victory. And you will be rewarded for eternity for your loyalty and your wisdom in choosing the side of light and life and truth. And so, you know, the big battle is upon us. The demons are coming out. They have revealed themselves, and they're ugly too, by the way. They're ugly. You can see them in Portland and Seattle. There's some ugly creatures all over the streets. Oh my gosh. There won't be any questions of who the demons are, by the way. They dress themselves up as demons, and they puncture their skin and have weird piercings and ink all over themselves, and they mutilate their own bodies, by the way, to prove their loyalty to, you know, to Satan. So it's not going to be hard to spot a lot of these people. Although there are some sleeper cells that try to act like, you know, maybe even pastors or popes or what have you. They're actually demonic entities on the inside. But for the most part, you can spot the demons just because they express their inner demons, you know, on purpose. They're not even hiding it. So the demonic infestation of Earth will ultimately be defeated. But this epic battle, which has only just begun, may take many, many years or even decades to play out, and is not going to be easy. And there's no simple, you know, recipe for how to navigate this part of it, other than to just realize we're going to be surrounded by evil, demonic, infested, and possessed creatures, and they're going to be trying to kill everybody who is on the side of God, and they will mass murder Christians. They've been doing this in the Middle East, actually, for a number of decades. And Christianity will be outlawed, you know, criminalized in the United States. They're arresting young preachers on the streets right now outside of abortion clinics just for reading the Bible. That's a crime in America. And you've got, who's the pastor in Canada who's been sentenced to years in prison simply for preaching the truth of God. And so you've got Christianity under extreme attack. And this is part of the battle. But in the end, the Satanists lose. And so when the satanic dominion over Earth comes to an end, that's when we really unleash the golden era of abundance, 1,000 years of Christ and human freedom and love and abundance and all these things that make humanity great. And whatever survivors are still with us at that time, and we would hope that you and I would both be among those survivors, but there's no way for us to know for sure. You know, we could be targeted and killed before that day comes. But, you know, I have a feeling God will call us back to serve him in whatever way is necessary. So, you know, hey, as long as you're with God, your future is assured. So no matter what the demons say, no matter what they want you to do, they want you to sign up for mutilating children, don't go along with it. Stay with God, and your future is guaranteed to be positive, no matter what happens on earth, because Satan cannot achieve victory over the Creator. Satan's just, you know, a lower entity that turned against God. And I know there are different interpretations. Some people think Satan is a fallen angel, and some people think Satan is like an alien AI system or whatever. Different interpretations, but Satan has no power compared to the Creator of the cosmos. And so Satan will lose this epic battle. And all of this is intertwined. That's what's fascinating in all of this. The money system, which the currency printing is an expression of evil and Satanism. The transgenderism, the debt, the lies, all the deceptions of our modern system, the poisoning of the food supply, the invocation of war and death and blood and suffering, the mutilations of children, the harvesting of their body parts, the adrenochrome, all these things are all expressions of Satanism. And so when I say that much of what exists in the world around you is coming to an end, that's not doom and gloom, because much of what exists is actually tied to Satan. All those things I just said. Much of the modern economy, or at least the governments and the monetary systems and the money printing, are all expressions of satanic evil and influence over humanity. So when those things come to an end, even though it will be highly disruptive, it will end Satan's dominion over this planet, and ultimately it will allow the rebirth of a new future for humanity under the protection of God. Now, there's a future worth looking forward to. And I believe that that future is our future. We have chosen it. And we must now simply adhere to that future and help make it a reality. And we do that each and every day with the choices we make and the words that we use and the actions that we take to help others, to defend life, to tell the truth, to expose the lies about the vaccines, the depopulation, bioweapons, the lies about war, the lies about medicine and so-called science, the lies about, you know, the grooming and the child sex trafficking. We have to expose all the satanic influences in the world. And by doing so, we will, of course, become enemies of the Satanists who run the censorship industrial complex. They're all Satanists. And they will try to call out those that they want to silence. And they will say, oh, you're spreading disinformation. And that's how they'll try to shut you down. But when they use that label, disinformation, what it really means is you're telling the truth of God. God, His words would be labeled disinformation in today's environment. The Bible is labeled disinformation. The Bible will get you arrested today, see? So that's proof right there of which side we're on. Very simple. All right, I've got a couple more news headlines to share with you here before we wrap this up today. But first, reminding you that the Sayer G Masterclass course called Regenerate Yourself is streaming for free right now today at brightu.com. And that's short for Brighteon University. It's just B-R-I-G-H-T and the letter U, brightu.com. You can register there for free. You can watch the entire series. I think this is day four or so out of 11. And you can also purchase, if you wish, optionally, the entire course for an instant download, but that's optional. And otherwise, you can just enjoy the free course. And it's really amazing. We've had a lot of positive feedback about it already. There was a neurological healing that really opened a lot of people's eyes. That already ran. But there are a lot of segments or chapters that you can still catch if you haven't done that already. And then also, by the way, coming up later this month on August 26th, the Saturday, we're launching another bombshell course there that's going to be free to watch, of course. And that course teaches you a different modality of healing. It's about Eastern medicine, so not only traditional Chinese medicine, but the other medical philosophies of Eastern nations, including Japan and Korea and so on. And it's a really fantastic course. That's coming up. If you register now on brightu.com, even just registering for the Regenerate Yourself course, then you'll receive an email before the Eastern medicine course runs, and you'll be able to watch that for free as well. So just get on that email list, even if you don't watch the course today, and you'll be alerted to the courses that are coming up. And then also, of course, if you want to support us at healthrangerstore.com, we appreciate your support. Lab-tested, certified, organic, storable food, as well as superfoods, nutritional supplements, first aid items, and a lot more, home care, personal care. And you know that I do not like fragrance, artificial fragrance molecules, so nothing we sell has crap fragrance ingredients, or frankly, any kind of crap ingredients of any kind. So check out our dishwasher automatic dishwasher detergent, our body soap for use in the shower, and we've also got an amazing line of toothpaste. Check out our ingredients on the toothpaste and you'll be amazed. All right, next news headline, which actually supports exactly what I was talking about, point 12 today, the widespread acceptance of cash is going to be ending. Well, we have a story today from Zero Hedge. Major Australian banks are going cashless. Is forced acceptance of CBDCs next? And the story talks about how Australia and also New Zealand, they tend to be the pilot projects for the globalists' worst nightmares. And of course, they're saying, hey, we want to make sure that people are not allowed to use cash. So top four banks in the country are removing over-the-counter cash withdrawals at most of their branches, reports Zero Hedge. But special centers will be put in place for, quote, more complex banking needs, including cash. It's considered complex now, you see. But the overall trend will be the reduction of paper money, forcing people to go fully digital. And there are also plans to make CBDCs that time out. Yeah, money in your digital wallet that times out, compelling the public to spend the money before it expires. You know, thereby dissuading saving money. Everybody, hurry up and spend. We have to have the economic numbers and make the fake president look good. You know, those kinds of things. There's also the issue of social credit scoring, Zero Hedge writes, which has been established in China, and it's creeping into Western institutions. What if one day the powers that be decide that certain speech and certain beliefs, you know, like maybe belief in Christianity, causes harm to the greater collective and must be suppressed through monetary penalties? Yeah, of course, that day is coming. And then another story out of Zero Hedge that's actually related to my talk about decentralization. That was point number seven. How a government domination over speech and money is actually about to end as people embrace decentralized peer-to-peer technologies. Well, there's a story today where Elon Musk, who owns Twitter, of course, now renamed X, the X company stole the username X from the previous owner of X. Basically, X was a user who held the name X since the year 2007. And then the X company has now seized the X username from that user and has, and the user is a photographer named Gene Huang, by the way. And Gene has now been given the username X123456789. And that's what the X company gave him when they stole X from him. Well, now Twitter has stolen the username @music. So there's a man named Jeremy Vaught who has had the @music handle for 16 years. And under Elon Musk, Twitter just stole the handle. Just said, well, yeah, we kind of like that name, @music. Probably they plan to launch a music service, you know, a music streaming service to compete with Spotify or something. And so they just took it. They said, ah, it's ours now. And then they gave this guy some other name to choose from, saying, ah, how would you like music? Or music123, yeah, because that sounds so good. Or music lover. And so turns out that under the terms of service of Twitter, that Twitter may, quote, reclaim usernames without liability to you. In other words, whatever your username is on Twitter, they can just take it from you at any time for any reason without explanation. That's it. So, question, why would you try to build a future on Twitter? Why would you even focus on Twitter? I mean, I post stuff on Twitter, but it's mostly just posting content like interviews and things, platforms, you know, content on other platforms like Rumble or Brighteon. And I'm not trying to build an audience on Twitter alone. Why? Because I don't trust the corporation of X, and now we have good reason not to trust them. See, this is the point. On Bastion, B-A-S-T-Y-O-N, Bastion.com, I have the username HealthRanger. No one can take it. Not even the owners of Bastion. Did you know that? Same thing is true on Cordal. If you go on a Cordal and you buy a username, and I bought HealthRanger, and even after you buy it, like, no one at Cordal, not even Jason Crow, the founder, no one can take it away from you. I even asked Jason this question. I said, hey, what if somebody has my name? You know, HealthRanger is trademarked and everything. I'm like, what if somebody has HealthRanger? He said, well, you're out of luck. You should just get it first. Because anybody can register anything. And people on Cordal have registered lots of names, like, you know, Coca-Cola and Pepsi and Disney and whatever. I wonder what Disney is going to say about that. They'll probably get so mad they'll go rape additional children or something, you know, and put it in a Disney movie, for God's sake. That's satire, obviously. It's kind of sick satire, come to think of it. Anything involving Disney is sick. Ugh, okay, sorry about that. But anyway, the point is that on true decentralized platforms, peer-to-peer, there is no central authority that can steal your name from you or force somebody else to give up a name. And this is why we need to use decentralized platforms. You know, you could spend, in this case, the guy spent 16 years on Twitter building up. He had 500,000 followers with the username @music. And now it's just gone. Just stolen from him by the corporation. Wow. What a bunch of pricks at Twitter, huh? At least they could have, you know, gone to him and said, look, how about we give you $1 million or something? They could have done that. That would have been the decent thing to do. Or at least $500,000, like $1 for every follower. I don't know. Here's $500,000. Would you voluntarily give us the username X? Instead, they just stole it and they said, yeah, good luck. Have fun. So, you know, this is just like government confiscation of your money. It feels kind of like the IRS reaching into your bank account and just saying, oh, your money is ours now. Thank you very much. Twitter could just take your username. Oh, thank you. Your username is our username now. Good luck. Not cool, Elon. Bad move. Very bad move. Not going to engender trust in the platform. That's for sure. And Twitter still censors, of course, Brighteon.com URLs. You can't even put them in any tweet. So Twitter is still engaged in a lot of censorship. And by the way, they're still censoring Alex Jones. How come Alex Jones hasn't been reinstated on Twitter, if it's a free speech platform? Reinstate Alex Jones and give this dude back his music handle, by the way. Or at least give him a decent offer. You know, pay him $500,000, for God's sake. It's Twitter. I mean, isn't Elon Musk the richest dude in the world? Couldn't he afford $500K to this guy to take the username? At least there would be some exchange, you know? At least. Even if it was involuntarily, it would be like, here, we gave you $500,000, you know, stop complaining, right? Or whatever. Okay, so that's the news for today. And I know it's a lot to take in. And I'm thinking I'll have an interview for you tomorrow, but I'm not entirely sure. My interview schedule has been a little bit chaotic recently. And mostly because of the decentralized TV show, which is, I've been doing a lot more interviews for decentralized TV, so some of those are coming out soon as well. Don't miss the Firo interview, which should be posted today. That's with Ruben at Firo. And again, you can find that at decentralize.tv. So thanks for listening today. Have a great day, and we'll be back with you tomorrow. God bless America. Take care.